I first interviewed Amy Smith on October 6th of 2013. I was familiar with her work via the collaborations with Simon Levin. Amy is an active studio artist and teaches at her alma mater, the University of Nebraska-Lincoln. Her porcelain forms reference the landscape of her youth as a runner. You can learn more about Amy and her work by visiting her website at www.amysmithporcelain.com. Thank you, Amy, and I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation. Can you talk about the process of setting up your current studio? And also, could you maybe, in talking about that, address some of the advantages and disadvantages of having your studio located at home in relation to family life and children?
Well, you know, to have the studio at home was maybe a 10 or 11 year goal. I graduated from UNL and, of course, wanted that right away. My husband and I already had a house, and so we wanted to build a studio or convert the garage or something like that and then build a kiln. So I wanted that right out of grad school, but really that had to be something that was put ahead of us, and I needed to wait for that. So I managed a studio out of grad school, and that was a very good experience. We built a kiln in that space, and then I think it was 11 years later that we had everything under one roof. So to transition from having a space at another location and then to have it at home was long awaited for. So for me, it felt great to finally have that, and it felt like it was an easy transition. I think it was harder for me to have to drive over to the other location and either, you know, wake my kids up at 5 and put them in their car seats and just like, go back to sleep, I need to turn the kiln up or whatever. So there were all these sacrifices that we had to make so that I could go to the studio and get some work done, and they would go to grandma's and I would run over and try to do 4 hours of work. So the one advantage that I had to the studio in terms of managing my time and getting work done over there was that when I was there, I was there. And that is all I was doing. One of the most difficult things about it was if I showed up and things weren't ready to trim, then I just had to make more and then put those under plastic and then try to gauge my time so that next time I came back, what I was originally going to trim, I could, and then gauge my time again to make sure that what I just threw would be ready and when should I go back for that. So all of that timing was tricky. The amazing thing about having everything at home is that I can just run out and check it, and if it's ready I can trim it, and if it's not then I just know about when to come back. Having the kiln at home is just phenomenal. I can get up, you know, I can fire like all night long and just set my alarm and walk outside and turn it up and fall back asleep and then set my alarm again for the next hour or two or whatever I need to, and just fire the kiln when everyone's asleep, and I love it. It was about a 15 minute drive maybe away. It was like 6 or 7 miles. Mm-hmm. I got so good at knowing exactly when to go back for the kiln. Like that kiln practically fired itself. I did it over at the other location, but this is much preferred.
That sounds like a fantastic setup.
It is.
Like a long awaited homecoming, you know?
Yeah. And you know, I was just at a high school presenting, and I probably had from 7 to maybe 1 o'clock, I probably saw 200 students come through working at this high school. And one of the things that I talked to them about was delayed gratification. If you want to be an artist, you really do have to practice delayed gratification. And I said, I still don't even have a sink in my studio, but I have a kiln and I have a website and I have these things that are way more important than a sink. So I just fill up a bucket with water and that's my sink. Don't feel like you have to have everything at once. That would be one thing that I would tell young people is, it's okay, you know, like if you have a family, the kids are only young once, you need to spend time with them. And I felt so lucky to be the person that stayed home and, you know, I saw them take their first steps. I was there when they said their first word, those kinds of things. I was there for that. And that's a huge privilege. But that meant that I had to wait my turn for all these other things.
I know, moving on to your children, that you must have had great needs in the first few years, especially with your son. Mm-hmm. And in your questionnaire, you stated that in those early days, you survived. And I think a lot of us can understand that that's probably the most accurate word to describe some of those early days. Can you talk a bit about the first few days, weeks, and months with your children, and what kind of support system were you able to rely on or did you have at those times? And when did you know that it was all going to be okay?
That's a good question. Well, the first Well, I'll start out with when I was in labor. I was in labor and I thought, okay, you know, when should I go to the hospital? And so there's that guessing game that, you know, a brand new mom, first time, you don't know what to do. So but I do remember thinking, we need to stop by the studio and make sure that the Viscom turned itself off. So we drove to the hospital and on the way stopped at the studio. So, you know, here I am walking into the studio and I have a contraction. I'm walking down the hallway having a contraction while I'm checking on the kiln. And I just had to know that that was done before I could go have this baby. And so we went to the hospital and I had this sense of relief that I knew that the kiln had shut itself off and now I could have this baby. So to me, that's this kind of really funny story of how connected everything is and how tied together it all is. And so I think in the first few weeks and the first few months with my son, my goal was to take 1 month off from the studio. And of course, with his issues, that was obliterated. And I think I had to take 6 months off. But we were in and out of the hospital. It wasn't just being at home, learning how to be a new mom. It wasn't just learning how to breastfeed. It was so much more than that. I felt like it was so important for me to get back. Or if I didn't get back, then what if I didn't ever go back?
Right.
It just seemed so like a huge, substantial moment to go back into the studio. I had a few ladies from church that I was asking for some help. I tried to take him with me. I even had one of the women come with me to my studio so I could nurse him and then just get a few things done and then nurse him again. But none of it seemed to work. It just seemed like I just had to wait and go back in once he was stabilized, I guess I should say. When did I know it was going to be all okay? I think it was when my in-laws moved to Lincoln. They saw how much trouble we were having, and they had always wanted to live in the same town as us. They wanted to be active grandparents. They quit their jobs, packed everything up, and sold their house and moved out. And they pulled up with that moving van, that huge moving truck, and I thought, okay, we're going to survive. We're going to make it. We're going to be all right. My mother-in-law came right up to me. She can be very close. She was an OB nurse, so she can get right in someone's face, you know, and say, you can do this. And so I remember her grabbing my face and just saying, we're here. You can make work.
So going back to those, again, first few days, months, years, where it was you had survived and the grandparents had arrived after the birth of your children, can you reflect on your feeling towards your studio practice at that point in time?
I mean, my studio practice in the very beginning when I had my first, it was just seen as something that I had to continue and I didn't know quite what it would look like. With the birth of our second, it almost made me more determined to make sure I got back in the studio and to make sure that I stayed committed and made work. But at the same time, I felt as though I had to, you know, take care of them, do my job, and wait my turn. So what happened was I had all these ideas, I had all these things that I wanted to do, and I just had to put that on pause. Because I know one time someone asked me, do you have more ideas than you have time for, or do you have more time and less ideas? And I think it would be excruciating to have all this time and not have ideas. That would be really difficult. It was easier to have more ideas and then have to wait my turn.
A number of moms have echoed the same sentiment that you made in your questionnaire, that the work suffers when one works at night and that we are better off working before our children rise. In fact, I would say that it was a 14 out of 15 moms.
Wow.
agree with this exact statement. As well, many women discuss ruining their work, the work that they were able to make by trying to produce more than they could finish when they had the chance. A speculative question, but why do you think that these are such prevalent comments from moms? And along with that, what do you think we can do in our studio practices to change the feeling that we can't quite dive in because we might get interrupted?
Oh, yes, that's so true. Oh my gosh, it's so true. Gosh, I just think we really, really need to be aware of ourselves and listen to those little voices that go off in our head. For instance, if I'm pushing and I'm trying to get a kiln loaded and, you know, trying to get it started by a certain time, if all of a sudden I hear, gosh, I'm hungry, I really need to stop and go eat an apple or something, you know, drink some chocolate milk, just something to get something in my stomach, or otherwise I hit the bowl on the side of the kiln accidentally, or I trip, or something happens, and, you know, I really have to be aware of that. Or if I say, man, I'm tired, instead of trying to get it done and, like you said, ruin the work, I really have to take care of myself. I think that we're so used to taking care of our children, and we're so used to giving and sacrificing for them. But then when it comes to ourselves, we just think that pushing through might be the best thing, but it's really not. If I take a break and I take care of myself, and I spend 15 minutes taking care of myself, take a breath, then I can go back and do a much better job. So what that I'm 15 minutes late in meeting my goal? I really have to take care of myself too. That's just as important as taking care of your kids.
That's a really good thing for all of us to listen to, not just those of us in clay, but
yeah.
I think all moms could use a little dose of that.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to turn more to the aesthetics of your work. You mentioned that they became more precise since the birth of your children. Can you elaborate on what that word means?
More precise would be that I spend a little more time with each piece, that I'm not concerned about production. That comes back to that question where you said, do I still rely on knowing thyself? Mm-hmm. And for me to accept that I'm not a production potter, for me to embrace that each bowl I make, there's this sort of one-on-one conversation that exists with it. That took some time, and I think I use the word precise because that's how I see what I'm doing. And I don't think that that would have necessarily happened if I had never had children. I think especially the school I came from, where it was, you know, a brouhaha boys club school, and you had to make big, and you had to make strong, and you had to make, you know, lots, and you had to make a pot and three poles. You know, I think I would have been called, and I think I would have felt a tie more to that, because that was where I started. So I think to have children and to sort of let go of that tie that I had, and to embrace more of me and more of who I am and who I was becoming because I was a mother, allowed me to make work that was more precise.
You were awarded the James Rosenquist Artist-in-Residence at North Dakota State University, which is fantastic, by the way. Can you talk about this experience? Did your work change, and if so, how? And also, while you were completing this residency, was your family able to join you at all in Fargo?
No, they were not. And so many moms were so surprised. How could you leave your family? And I just said, well, I'm coming home every 2 weeks to see them. So I didn't want to pull them out of school. I didn't want to uproot them or change, you know, their lives or not have them see their friends. They were both doing so well in school that I thought that that would be cruel to pull them out. But the residency was just amazing. It was so cool to go up to this school, to know that I was just there and that I would be gone. And I tried so many new things that I never had tried when I taught at UNL as adjunct. And it really sort of opened this door for me of pushing my students harder and in different ways and trying new exercises in my classes. And it was really unexpected and a huge surprise for me. The people were phenomenal. The living up there and experiencing a different culture within the United States was so exciting. And like I said, to push my students differently, it was the first time that I had taught figure drawing and I had advanced students. So it was just a delight to work with them. I was able to, you know, try a few different techniques. For instance, I was doing cone 10 electric, which I hadn't done since grad school. With the facilities up there, I was able to do some testing. So that was exciting. And then I was able to explore with some color, which was it's new for me. So much of my work is white.
In response to one of the questions, when you were asked about the biggest challenge facing moms in the ceramics field, and this probably plays right into that idea of running, you cite health as a big challenge. Can you talk about what you do to tackle this issue in your own life? And also, what can we do for our physical, mental, emotional health needs? And how should, you know, what are ways that women can address these issues?
One of the things that I do is that I throw standing up. And I've done that since I went to grad school. So I've thrown standing up since 1998. And I think that that's been a very good thing for me. The other thing, you know, that I run, gosh, you know, I think the mental might actually be more important, making sure that your mental health needs are taken care of. Whether it's joining a mom's group so you can just feel normal, you know, just admitting if you need a little help and then going and getting it is tremendous. Wherever that may be, or in whatever form that takes. And for everyone, it's going to be a little bit different. you know, I mean, we always hear as moms when we're in the hospital, if you feel blue or if you think you have postpartum depression, make sure you say something to someone. You know, that in itself, too, is, you know, to be aware and to notice if you're a little bit different, or to maybe ask a really good friend, hey, do you think I'm doing okay? That's hard to do. That's hard to be vulnerable like that. But I think that that's very important.
What advice do you have for young women working in the ceramics field as they begin to think about, or not, you know, yep, their future as mothers and makers? Mm-hmm. And I say or not because some people don't think about that, those issues of becoming a mother or finding a relationship or all of that. You know, we don't always think about it maybe when we're young. You know, what would you say to young women in the ceramics field?
I would say that they need to ask themselves, who do they want to become? And to very seriously consider if they want children or not. Because once you have them, you're never not a mother. Yeah, I think they really need to figure out where they want to go, who they want to become, and then if children are a part of that or not. It's so hard to make with children. On the flip side, they're only young once. I've said that before. And they grow up so fast. And that's what everyone seemed to say to us when we first had our son. Oh, they grow up so fast. They grow up so fast. They'll be gone before you know it. Now, it didn't feel that way with him and his health issues. I can see why people say that now. And I can see why they say it now that we've had, you know, our daughter who hasn't had any health issues, that they do just grow up so fast. You can always make. Once they're gone, you can always make. And for me to have my degree, no one can take that away from me. I can teach when I'm 55 years old if I want to. I don't know if I answered your question or
not. No, you really have. I mean, it's a hard thing to think about, you know, of how to talk to a younger generation, you know, and even to sometimes think back to ourselves, you know, in those BA, BFA, you know, pre-master's or even master's degree shoes. It's I think, a different place from where a lot of us are now. I just think about, you know, what kind of message could we send to those women, and how could we help them to understand the pros, the cons, the joy, the sorrows, yeah, the whole mixed bag of options that we have as women.
Yeah. Well, and it's so different. I mean, when I looked at men who were fathers, it's just not the same. There are a few men who are the primary caregivers now. But when I was in a BFA program, I couldn't think of any father who was the primary caregiver for the children. You know, of course, as a BFA, I wanted to get married, I wanted a family, but you know, the reality of that is just so different. Once the baby's made, they're yours, and you're taking care of them no matter what happens. You're the one taking care of them. Even with our son and all the doctor's appointments and everything, I think in the beginning, I didn't really know how to advocate for him. I would take him to the doctor and ask my questions, and then the doctor would say whatever he did, and I just trusted the doctor. I didn't even know how to say, no, that's not really what's going on. This is what's really going on and what I'm struggling with at home. Through his issues, you know, I learned how to advocate for him, but that in itself took quite a while.
That's a good word to use, advocating, not just for our children, but for ourselves, you know, for our families, for all of it.
I think what we could tell young women is, think of who you would be if you didn't have children. Now, of course, it's just hypothetical, but think of who you would be if you didn't have children. Now, think of who you would be if you did. And, you know, which path are you going to take? But I would tell them to interview like you are. I mean, I would tell them to ask and ask really hard questions and ask people to be really honest with them.
My child is very young, but I felt like those hours and minutes seemed so immense and long. I mean, they felt never ending. And then I kind of always felt like at the same time, the months and weeks were really fast. Perspective of time can really shift.
Right. Like the day drags, but the weeks fly.
Yes.
I have talked to a few people about whether or not they should have children. And I don't know why or how these conversations happened, but I would talk very seriously about giving yourself up for them, and then I would say, but it's fucking amazing. When it's your turn, it is fucking amazing. Here's this baby that's growing inside of you. You don't do anything, and everything happens, right? So it's not like you say, oh, it's time to release this chemical. No, it's all done.
Yep.
I mean, there's no other way to describe it besides those two words together. And I told this one person, I said, I would never have understood how much God loves me until I took care of this flailing, helpless infant. And I loved him more than anything in the world. How can you have that kind of experience until it's yours? You can't. So here's this, you know, understanding that I gained because I was a mother. And I couldn't have gained it any other way. Every emotion that I'd ever had was multiplied. If I felt proud about something when I had children, it was just off, like off the charts. If I was angry, it was off the charts. Every single emotion that I'd ever had up until being a mother, having children multiplies it. It's crazy. I'm sure you felt that mother bear instinct at one point, and didn't it kind of scare you?
Yeah. Who do you think are the biggest role models when it comes to successful women working in clay who are also mothers? What have you gained from their experiences or from them or not?
You know, what I would say, not necessarily to name a person, but to name a group of women who I've watched.
Sure.
And most of them have come from UNL and then they've gone, you know, they've gone off to do their own thing, is that they established their career first and then they had children. I would say that that was a really good thing for them to do. So I think it's really difficult to do it the other way around. But I did get to watch everyone and see what they did and adjust to the changes and utilize what I can.
I hope you enjoyed this conversation. For more information or to listen to additional interviews like the one you just heard, please visit www.bothartistandmother.com. Funding for this project was made possible by St. Olaf College's Academic Innovation Fund. Special thanks to Caleb Genheimer for his audio editing, the Ericksons for their music, Heather Wang for her transcription skills, Rachel Elizabeth Murphy for her web expertise, and to all the artist mothers. Thank you.